thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you.
Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up on the program, we've got some news on the Black Library, the progress with the Black Library. It's some good news. Patricio Rubio has more on that. And farmer and nutritionist Eugene Thalman will be joining us live in studio. But first, we do want to get to the latest news coming out of Albany. Of course, all of Albany is tied up right now, trying to get the budget tied up. The New York State budget is due on April 1st, and there are many areas of contention between Governor Hochul and the legislature in the state budget as the final weeks of negotiations take place, but the biggest sticking point is likely to be bail reform. Hochul wants to make more changes to the law, which ended most forms of cash bail. Lawmakers are resisting. Karen DeWitt has more.
The governor would like to once again amend the law, which has been tweaked twice since it was enacted in 2019. She'd get rid of a provision in the law added last year that says judges must consider the least restrictive means necessary to ensure that an accused person returns for their court date. The governor spoke about it recently in Rochester.
We have this inconsistency in the law. Confusion is understandable, and I want to make sure that we remove that one standard, give them criteria to look at, and I want to make sure that the judges have what they need. So removing the least restrictive means standard for bail-eligible cases, which are the serious violent offenses, is what we're going to be looking for. And we're not thinking.
Hochul says current law leads some judges to interpret the bail reform laws as meaning they can't hold people pre-trial, even for violent charges.
Whether or not they're going to go out and hurt someone again, or perhaps kill someone this time.
Hochul's bail reform changes are not included in the budget plans released by the Senate and Assembly, where Democrats hold supermajorities. That sets up a potential fight between the governor and the legislature as the budget deadline draws near. Senate leader Andrea Stork-Cousins says a study by CUNY's John Jay College of Criminal Justice done on New York's bail reform laws shows that recidivism rates for misdemeanors drop by 50% and by 27% for nonviolent felonies.
Recidivism dropped, but you're not keeping people who can't pay bail, who have been accused of a misdemeanor, in jail where their entire lives are disrupted.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says bail reform didn't cause a crime spike that affected New York and the nation over the past 3 years, and that's one reason why the Assembly did not include the changes to the law in its budget proposal. But he says he gets that people are concerned about crime, whatever the underlying causes.
Statistics are going down. Study after study is showing that bail reform is not the driver of crime. But we still have a feeling that, you know, people are safe, but I'm still not sure people feel safe. And I think that's something we're still going to have to try to figure out.
Both the Assembly and Senate budgets increase aid for mental health care and other community-based services that help deter people from committing crimes in the first place. Hochul's proposal does have the support of Republicans in the legislature who are in the minority party in both houses. Senate GOP leader Robert Ort points out that the John Jay study also found that the bail law changes tended to increase recidivism rates of people charged with violent felonies, especially those who had substantial recent criminal histories, including those accused of multiple burglaries. Ort says judges need to have the power back to hold repeat offenders pre-trial.
To look at someone and say, you've been arrested 10 times in the last 2 months. I think you're a danger to yourself and the community. I think you should be held. That's our position. And I would be willing to bet, forgetting John Jay, that the study by New York voters and New York residents would back up our position.
But Republicans alone can't provide enough votes for the governor's measure to pass. Hochul, who said she prefers the right budget to an on-time budget, appears ready to dig in her heels in order to get enough Democrats on board to win passage of the bail law changes.
I'm listening to the voices of New Yorkers. Top two issues are public safety. They support our bail plan.
She says the second priority is her plan to build 800,000 new housing units over the next several years. But lawmakers have already rejected key tenets of that plan, leading to yet another budget fight. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And thanks to Karen DeWitt and New York State Public Radio Exchange for that report. And we are going to continue reporting on this budget process, looking at the discussions, the debates, to figure out what's going to go into the New York budget. And we'll be bringing you a special episode-long interview with New York Focus next Tuesday to really go through all the ins and outs on that. But right now, live in the studio, joining us in person once again, it's Eugene Thalman. Eugene, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me tonight.
Farmer, nutritionist, and president of Sullivan County Farm Market Association. So let's start there. How are the farmers markets shaping up now that it's spring? I hear over in Calicoon you might be outdoors soon.
Yeah, within 2 weeks we'll be outside. It's going to be great. In 3 weeks, just a little change, we're going to be having our market on Easter Sunday on a Saturday. We usually have the market every Sunday from 11 to 2, and this is one of the weekends where it's going to be on Saturday in observance of Easter. So hopefully you guys can make it at that at the different time. Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's what's coming up. Other markets coming online in as the spring gets going?
Yeah, there's a bunch of farmers markets going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. I know that in Conneaugh Lake, they're going to be doing a once a month for the preseason. Liberty is going to start in late June and go until September. And the other market I do as a farmer is Narrowsburg, which starts May 25th, right around there. So we still got a bit of time before other markets, but the Calicoon market is going strong all year round.
And, you know, the springtime, like we're talking about farmers markets and opening up and things like that. But of course, that wouldn't be able to happen if there were new things to eat in the springtime, right? What does the springtime mean in terms of what farmers are actually doing and getting ready to bring to the table?
Well, one of the exciting products that I supply the market with is these salad greens. As you might know, I do microgreens for my primary crop. And the salad greens, we have a similar method where we're doing this and letting them grow a little bit longer, but in the ground. And we have different stages of where we can do them. For instance, one greenhouse has a lot of technology in it and a unique cover called Solar Wrap. And that one allows me to really keep the heat in. Creates a really nice environment inside. I always like to make the joke when I show people like this propagation area of the greenhouse, which has the solar wrap over it, is I'm taking green office space to the next level.
Keeping it warm in there.
Yeah, but the salad greens, they're absolutely fantastic. And as the season progresses, it's going to be a little while because, you know, you got to look at the soil. When it's really muddy like that, you can't get equipment into a field.
No. It's tough just getting from my house to my car with as muddy as it is. I can't imagine taking a vehicle out into a field. But what does it mean that because of these greens, then now that means people can be eating fresh foods, cold foods? What does that mean for folks?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought it up. Right now it's the spring equinox, or it was the spring equinox. And
just yesterday.
And, you know, it feels like spring today.
It totally does.
So because it's getting warmer and we're used to being cold, think about how now a salad could be something that's light and refreshing. You don't really need that heartiness, that warmth to really heat you up from the inside out. So in the coming weeks, as the temperature increases, while we were used to the cold, it's going to be easier to eat things that aren't hot. And because we have these salad greens and radishes and other items going to be coming really available with a lot of high energy from the rapid growth that is being experienced in nature right now, we're able to actually take that in and have a lighter diet. And I also want to talk about how when you're doing this, you could even do it for a very short period of time because we have a natural momentum of the seasonal change. And we can do something for a few days, like maybe have a few salads. And then it becomes in our mind beginning to form a habit of how we can transition our diet from a very hard, hearty cold to combat the cold to something that's more in line with the season.
Mm. And what does that do for the individual if they actually go through the effort of making the transition and doing it in a timely fashion now? What does it mean for what's going on inside of you?
Well, if we think about like the animals in society in our the animals in the environment in our community, like a deer, for instance, you know, what they were able to eat over the winter has been harder. And you know, you're conserving energy and there's that natural tendency. So you have to think that there's an accumulation of natural waste products. And let's go into the most pure sense of that. When you have that accumulation of metabolic waste from the winter season, well, now because you were eating things that were hard, you know, more sturdy, whereas now if you have something that's more alive with higher enzymatic activity, you're going to program your body to be able to start to clean out some of those things. It's amazing. Like, we all know that the animals will gain weight over the winter, and this is a way that, you know, as spring changes, you can change the momentum of how your body's operating.
You know, and I'm now you're making me think of, like, that sounds like it will also dovetail. Correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like that dovetails also with people's other activities start changing as the weather gets warmer. You know, not, I mean, a lot of folks have to work outdoors all year round, but a lot of us don't. And then this is the time of year it gets nicer out. You start getting outside more. You start doing more. So does this nutritional change help inform different seasonal activities?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's great to get outside. Just going with the motif of waste streams and removing waste from our bodies, one benefit of being outside is the air is very clean. And there's chemical messengers that these trees are giving off, which may or may not have an effect on our own body. But that's just a far out example of, like, if there's not pollution in the air and you're in a place like the Catskill Park where there's minimal cars and the air is very clean, therapeutic, just the act of breathing out, we underestimate the how much of a waste product in our own metabolism carbon dioxide is. So by just breathing in more at the very basic level, we're having instantaneous detoxification. So, and that goes into the idea that, you know, when you're doing one, you're getting this transition, you know, to the outside, to being more alive, even what you're eating, they can work off of each other and create a positive feedback loop of feeling. And we all know we all want to feel great.
When, so I go outside, it's been a couple of nice days this past week. I go outside, get a breath of that fresh air, and it's like, ah, that's pretty good. Like, that feels good. I'm not just imagining things. I'm not just being nostalgic for other times of year. There's actual freshness entering my system and changing how I feel.
Well, I opened my windows today because of how warm it was, and hopefully yeah. I'll get some of that stale air from the winter out of the house.
We've got about 3 minutes here, and I'm wondering, as we talk about, you know, noticing the change of seasons, noticing how that changes other things about our lives. You're somebody, you're working outdoors, you're working with plants. I'm wondering what sign of spring you're looking for that maybe you haven't seen yet. We've seen a number of them, but maybe there's something that's coming up as this things start to warm up that you're looking forward to that you have not seen, whether that's in the natural world or the man-made world.
Well, I always like to watch the birds. I find that the birds are great messengers of signs and omens. Not to go into the world of just fairy tales, but it's amazing to see what kind of birds are around. I did see two robins playing the other day. I think they were robins. And it was a nice sight to see that there's that type of liveliness in the air as well.
And springtime is a time for rebirth, a new life, and you and the animals start having their young around. You're going to have some young folks over by the farm, is that right?
Yeah, so tomorrow we're going to have the CCHS students come over. We're going to do a tour of where the high tunnels are at in this present moment, and I'm pretty happy about where I'm at right now. We have one greenhouse full of salad greens already grown, ready for this market this weekend. Then we have one that has just been planting, so we're creating a succession. And the last one is in the first year of planting, so we're a little more extreme. We put down a tarp to be able to kill the weeds, have a really nice weed-free start, and we're going to do peppers in there. And then hopefully we'll also be able to do a little bit of blueberry pruning and really look at the blueberries and what this bud does, what that bud does, and just a little bit about plant biology as well.
Wow, that's great. All right. So before we go, one more time, if you want to just let folks know at least like the next few weeks outlook for Calicoon Farmers Market.
Yep. So this next week we'll be in the Youth Center for the last time. The week after that, that's April 2nd, we'll be outside for the first time. And then the third week after that, we'll be outside and on a Saturday. And then for the remainder of the summer season, we will be outside on Sundays, 11 to 2, regardless of the weather.
All right. Sounds like a plan. It sounds like we got to have you back before long to talk about the other farmers markets opening up as the season really gets going. Eugene, I want to thank you so much for coming out here in person. Thank you.
Thanks for having me again.
Once again, that was Eugene Thalman, nutritionist, local farmer, president of Sullivan County Farm Market Association. When we come back, we'll get the latest on the Black Library folks have been working on in Monticello. Remember, coming up tonight after the local edition at 7 o'clock, it's Music Emporium with Mr. Kusar Grace. This is Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of two Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Set your controls for the Heart of the Sun and tune in to hear the psychedelic synth situations of electronic hairpieces with your host, Nikki Beto. In this new weekly program, I'll be spinning retro synth, psychedelic, and experimental records Thursday nights at 10 p.m. following Connect the Dots at 9. Only on Radio Catskill.
Listen local.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. And you may have heard of the Black Library. This is something that folks are trying to open in Monticello, and we've got some good news on its progress tonight. The Black Library aims to commemorate Black culture and heritage while fostering a cooperative, innovative, and informative environment for Sullivan County residents. They plan to offer an assortment of literature by Black writers, showcase art exhibitions by African-American artists, conduct educational workshops, and facilitate community dialogues. And tonight, we can report they just signed a lease to open a physical space right in the heart of Monticello. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke to Eliana Hutchinson, co-director of the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, about the Black Library and the collaboration with HPAC.
DJ actually had approached us, the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, about kind of hosting this idea of a Black Library. And it was right in the time when Creatives Rebuild New York had started, and that's a grant that was funding full-time pay for artists to create a project for 2 years. And so it was kind of just a perfect alignment. And so we are partnered. They are a project of the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and we support them with administration, so, you know, their salaries, benefits, and then any kind of administrative items for, like, the grant and just helping them with kind of the logistics of running a business. They are the directors of the Black Library, so it's really their project, and they get to, you know, make a lot of the decisions about programming and kind of how they want to interface with the community.
Right.
It's been really fun and really wonderful working with them. We ended up getting, you know, basically DJ and Mike had really wanted a space in Monticello that was walkable, that you could get to and give a place, a safe place where people can really hang out, learn, and kind of be engaged in Black culture, Black history, and art. And I think above all, art. So we ended up, they had actually looked at the Key Bank building in Monticello, which is right next to the government, the courthouse, because it's just such a great location. It's easy to get to. And the Sullivan County Land Bank had that space. So we worked with them and was able to get a lease with them for the remainder of the grant period. So we're very excited. We finally got that, as you saw in the paper.
Yeah. So. No, that's fantastic. I said it's happening. I said I remember, you know, talking to Doug and Mike for a while back, and now seeing that they actually have a space happening. That's fantastic, and it's, like I said, right in the heart of Monticello. So it's a great location for it to happen. So the lease was signed. So now there's a new project now of moving into the new space and setting it up.
Yeah.
I know they've been collecting books. So you could sort of go over what kind of programming and what can folks expect when they walk into the doors of the Black Library?
Sure. I think we've already collected, certainly more than 1,000 books already have been collected, which is wonderful. And so the space is still currently set up like a bank. So it has kind of cubicles on one side and then the kind of counter space on the other side. And so where the counter is will probably be where the books, kind of a large bookshelves will be set up, and seating areas. And then where the cubicles are will be small artist studios. And the goal is to have talks and talkbacks and readings, poetry readings and things like that in the space.
And that's great.
We've already started doing meetings regularly at the library in Monticello, the public library, which has been really great, the Crawford Library. And they've been so supportive in allowing us to, you know, have meetings, meet the community, kind of get feedback from folks and be able to collect books as well. It's been really great.
No, definitely. I said now you have a space for all that to happen. You know, have your own space. I'm sure as time goes on, it gets decorated the way they want, really reflect what's happening in the community. And it's great, like that, the community has an outlet. Monticello is very one of the most diverse areas of Sullivan County. So it's great that there's a place there for folks to go and to, you know, have events like this and have a place that they may feel welcome to explore and find out things they may not be aware of. So
absolutely. Yeah. And we're really looking forward to kind of collaborations that we can do with both the town of Monticello and Sullivan County at large, and like working with like the school districts and, you know, other community groups and things. That's something we really are excited to do and make sure that, you know, there is a true dialogue happening and a really safe place in order to have those dialogues.
It's really great that this is happening in the lower part of the county, like in Fallsburg and Monticello, because a lot of the arts and cultures events that we have here in the county all happen sort of in the western sort of part of the county and is not always accessible to those who live in the southeast or the east part of the county. So now this is accessible. This is accessible, you know, to move Sullivan to the bus.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to say.
Yeah.
We have the bus, so we have bus access. It's really great. And in fact, the move on comes to Hurleyville as well. So we are doing like a cinema series with the Black Library that'll be on Thursdays, the first Thursdays of the month. We'll be screening films, you know, related to Black history or Black culture or, you know, pop culture. So it can be anything from a superhero movie to a documentary.
Wow, that's awesome.
And it'll have a talk back.
Yeah.
So that there can be really a discussion of context and everything for these kind of this kind of material.
We talked about some of the activities that happen at the Black Library, and we talked about, you know, the events there. So I guess we could sort of sum up exactly what the Black Library and HPAC sort of aim to promote in Sullivan County.
I think it's really about having voices heard when they exist. And I think there's just sometimes a lot of not awareness of how much rich kind of history and content there is, especially in Black history. And so, you know, making sure that people have access to be able to read so many of the great books and, you know, poetry and songs and things that have been produced by Black voices, and also just contemporary, like modern day living people who are artists, working artists. You know, DJ and Mike are both working artists, professional working artists, and we have so many creative people in Sullivan County that giving them an opportunity to show and express their work and kind of prepare them to be able to show their work at other institutions as well is really important. So I think that's kind of the goal. And having having a place really dedicated to having conversations is so important, and it's something that we don't really have enough of, I think. So.
Absolutely. You know, just thinking about now, just because we just had a conversation with a person from an organization called Defense for Democracy, and they're really they're fighting against like sort of the book bans, what's happening in schools.
Yes.
How, yeah. You know, certain districts don't allow certain readings, and a lot of it has to do with critical race theory and mm-hmm. sort of blocking, you know, even making comments. Some schools were making comments that they don't see the educational significance of having a Black Studies department or classes in their school. So this is coming at a great time that you can have exactly. these type of discussions yeah. locally yep. and see what's happening here locally and how it affects us locally and where they can express their concerns about it potentially happening here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I know the Brooklyn Public Library did a program where they, you know, you can do virtual library cards. So they're doing that in order to ensure that people have access to these books that are getting banned. Mm-hmm. And for us, I mean, it's at the moment, the goal is not to compete with or anything with a public library. We don't have that infrastructure, but it's really being able to have access to the books and more importantly, having access to the conversation so that people know that these books exist, know that this history exists and that they can seek it out as best they can. And then a lot of that, you know, the resources are available and so much of it is just about awareness, you know, and once you know that there that so many of these kind of social justice issues and stuff have been discussed and have been really you know, reviewed is really helpful. And it sort of can lead you down to the path of you know, kind of living in your power, you know.
Right.
And that's really important.
Well, the springtime is here. The weather today was beautiful. So that gears up, or my mind it starts gearing me up for events that are happening outdoors. And I know HPAC had a great season last year. What's in store for this season so far with HPAC?
Sure. We have our cinema is open. So we've got several first run movies coming up. We're doing a Thursday movie screenings that are like independent films, documentaries, and talkbacks on Thursdays. And then our normal cinema screenings on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The upcoming confirmed are Mario Brother and Shazam are both of the two first run movies that will be running. We also have the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra will be performing on the 25th. We have the Sullivan County Music Festival coming up. So that's in June. And that's all local original music. So it's a day-long music festival. And this will be our second annual music festival. We will be doing Pride again this year, so that's in July, and the Indigenous Women's Voices Summit as well.
All good stuff that's happening in Harleyville, yeah. and now working with the Black Library. So it's all good stuff, cultural Very stuff exciting. That's coming up to, like I said, the a good part of the other side of the county was the Fallsburg and Monticello. All these great things are happening in this neck of the woods. So it's great that's actually is happening. So for more information, you can visit HurleyvilleArtsCenter.org. We're talking to Ileana Hutchinson, co-director for HPAC, letting us know about the Black Library and everything that's coming up in the upcoming season for HPAC. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Pleasure.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
Thank you, Patricio, for that report. Thank you to all of our guests tonight. And thank you so much for listening. Do keep listening. Mr. Kusar Grace, Music Emporium coming up next. Lots of great music. We'll be back tomorrow with more great news. 6:30 every weekday evening here on the Local Edition. Never miss an episode. Sign up for the Local Edition podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And keep listening right here on air. Online at WJFFradio.org, on your smartphone or on your smart speaker. This is Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank for over 100 years. Meeting banking needs with a variety of deposit and loan products.
Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. From Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And from listeners like you.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. W233 AH Monticello.